Well, good morning. Oh, it sounds like everybody's awake today, ready to go. Good for you. Well, guys, my name is Dave, and it is always fun to be back here at Timberlake. If you have been around a while, then you know I say this almost every time, that this really has become a second home for me, because I have been speaking here multiple times a year ever since Pastor Ben became the pastor back in, 2008? I don't know, 6 months after he had his sex change, whenever that was. And, it's fun to speak as his friend and not as his employee, I'll tell you that. So here's the deal. We decided, Ben and I, we talked back and forth, and I said, Ben, here, every time I come to Seattle, I come in the winter or the spring, where it is cold and rainy. I said, I want summertime. I want prime time in Seattle. So thank you for presenting your best image for me and my family, which I actually brought along my family this year, just so we can enjoy some time together. And so we're going to head out to Lake Chelan during the week and really get to experience the best that this state has to offer. Now, I know it's not a kind thing to point out the flaws of a church when you are the guest speaker, but I noticed in the lobby, this is the land of coffee, and you guys offer decaf. Really? Does anybody actually drink decaf? Yeah. A couple of it. Decaf is like kissing your sister, all right? There's nothing wrong with it. It just does nothing for you. And so I don't understand the reason anybody would drink decaf, but there you go. Some of you have bought into whatever vibe that decaf might have to offer. So you're in this series called Unstoppable. When Pastor Ben said to me, this is the series we're in, I was totally jazzed because I think that that title summarizes where so many of us want to be in life. I think that summarizes, if we could sit down and have a conversation about where we want our life to go, all of us would say we want to be the kind of people that don't let discouragement, that don't let defeat, that don't let tough times, that don't let frustration stop us in any arena. We just want to keep moving forward. We want to be unstoppable, which is why ever since we're little kids, I think superheroes are such a big deal to us. We admire superheroes, right? From 4, 5, 6 years old, we're buying into Superman and into Spider-Man and into Wonder Woman and into Batman and into Cheech and Chong. And we get all worked up with our superheroes because we're thinking those are the guys who are totally not going to let defeat. They're not going to let frustration. They're not going to let discouragement. They're not going to let any of those things stop them. They're going to just keep moving forward. And so the question that I just want to start today, and I'm just going to ask you a bunch of questions this morning, but the question that I kind of want to start with today and get you thinking is, what does it look like to be unstoppable? What does it look like? If you were to begin to define the characteristics of someone who's totally unstoppable, the things that kind of trademark them, and when you look at them, you're like, I can tell they're unstoppable. What are those characteristics? What does that even look like? Because I think it's important, if we're going to be in this series, to identify the person who has an unstoppable life. Because if you think about it, in every arena of life, when you mention certain character traits, or you mention certain groups of people, everybody kind of has this image that comes to mind because there's character traits that define them. All right, so if I talked about hippies for a moment, I don't even have to define them, and you already have these images in your mind, right, of like long stringy hair, or maybe granny glasses, or a Volkswagen van, or maybe someone out back smoking something they shouldn't be smoking, right? We have these ideas of, okay, that's what a hippie is, or we could say it with bikers. What comes to your mind? Black leather, bikes, tough-looking group of people. Right, there's defining characteristics, which, just as a side note, what's the difference between a Hoover vacuum cleaner and a Harley-Davidson motorcycle? The Hoover has a dirt bag on the inside. All right, here we go. That wasn't right. If you're a college student, if I just talk about college student, we all have these images of someone who's got books and a backpack and maybe spending long, sleepless nights trying to cram for courses. There's this image that comes to our mind. If I mention techies, you picture people who are into gadgets, many of you who work at Microsoft, right? You're into all of these new pieces of technology that just make life so simple and so fun. If we talked about someone who owned a Lord of the Rings sword collection, Yeah, you think dork. And the funny thing is, if you own one, you're totally proud of it, right? You're like, dork for life, no doubt about it. My sword collection's worth more than your home. And everybody gets excited because we have these things that define certain groups of people. And I think probably there's no group of people more easily identified than an individual or group of people who are passionate about a sports team. Whether that's basketball or baseball, you can tell people who are fanatical about sports. Why? Because they're loud and proud about it. They're wearing jerseys. They're intense about that group. And so in the Midwest, we've got everything from hockey to baseball to basketball. But I would say in the Midwest, the number one sport, hands down, has got to be football. All right, huge football area. And I think it's probably similar out here in Washington. You know, football's a big deal. The most annoying fans in the Midwest, now I'm from Wisconsin, so I'm a Green Bay Packer fan, but I would say the most annoying fans in the Midwest, Pittsburgh Steelers fans. That means nothing to you. But they are not even, to me, I lived out in Washington, I lived in Seattle for a while, they are not even close as annoying as Raider fans. All right? Any Raider fans who want to admit it today? Right? No, of course not. Nobody's going to admit it in this group of people. Of course not. Raider fans are just annoying. You get around. If you've ever been to a game, you know what I'm talking about. You know I'm not exaggerating. All right? Everybody's wearing black and silver, committing felonies, hanging out in the prison yard together. Right? It's like a cult. They just get together and it's like, ah, here we go and we're going to destroy you. And it's all this action. But all of those groups of people, and we could just spend our whole morning talking about different groups of people and how they're identifiable. So the question again goes, what identifies someone who's unstoppable? Unstoppable in their marriage. Unstoppable in their faith, unstoppable as a parent who's not letting the frustration and the difficulties and the challenges keep them from moving forward and cause them to lose motivation. What is it? Because I think you have the answer. I don't think it's just their courage. I don't think it's their energy level. And I don't think it's their passion. I think it just comes to a very simple thought. And that is they're people who've learned to take responsibility for their own life. They're people who've learned to own their problems. They're individuals who've learned to own their circumstances. I think the parent who, regardless of what's happening with their kid and all the frustration, they're watching their kid do everything they taught them not to do. I think the parent that keeps moving forward is just unstoppable is the one who continues to own their responsibilities as a parent and say, I'm going to continue to pray for my kid. I'm going to continue to guide them. I'm going to continue to be an example to them. I'm just not going to throw in the towel. I'm going to own my responsibilities as a parent. In our marriages, we all get to the point where we just want to throw in the towel and give up and quit, and it's frustrating. But the ones who are unstoppable are the ones who say, this is my marriage. I committed till death do us part, and I'm going to do my part. I can't do their part. And if they choose to walk out, if they choose to give up, that's their deal. But for me, I am going to own it. I think the people who are unstoppable in this life are the ones who've chosen to be responsible and own their own life. Now, we all know it's a little uncommon to find that. Right, the conversations we find ourselves getting into, and we ourselves are victim of many times of being a part of these conversations, both on the listening end and on the communicating end, are the times we get around and say things like, well, the reason I'm not growing spiritually, the reason I'm not moving forward in my spiritual journey, quite honestly, it's the church I go to. It's the pastor. Not deep enough for me. The growth groups aren't deep enough for me. I just wish that we had this. I wish we had that. And we put all the blame somewhere else and we don't take responsibility for our life. If that's where we go in our spiritual journey, guess what? We'll be at a dead end. We'll stop moving. We'll stop going forward. Well, the reason my financial life is a mess, oh, it's the economy. It's my boss doesn't pay me enough. They don't give me what I'm worth. It's them. It's them. It's my daughters. It's my wife. Instead of owning it. The reason our country's falling apart is because of the irresponsible Republicans. It's the irresponsible Democrat. The reason my kids are out of control and they're failing at school and they're totally disrespectful is because of their teacher. It's the school they go to. The reason I'm angry all the time. The reason I just can't keep my emotions under control. If you would have grown up in the house that I would have grown up in. The reason I'm constantly struggling with my health issues is I only live 6.2 miles from Burgermaster. And if they would move Burgermaster, my life would be so much better. Guys, this is the elephant in the room. This is something we all struggle with, this entitlement, this victim, this pointing fingers at everybody else and refusing to own our problems. And I'd say, for all of us, it starts really, really young. Nobody even has to teach us. I have this moment, I don't know for what reason, but I have this moment embedded in my memory from first grade. I think it was because it was the first time I really got in trouble. I had kicked a girl in our class, Melissa Ronstedt. just kicked her. Because that's cool in first grade, right? I was a boy, I kicked a girl. And so I kicked this girl, I end up in the principal's office, and Mr. Zimmerman, who's our principal, he looks to me, and I remember this conversation. He goes, "Dave, what were you thinking? Why did you kick her? Did you kick her?" And I said, "I did." I said, "But it was an accident." I said, "I turned around and my leg went up when I turned around." And he looked at me, and I don't know why it's embedded in my memory, just I think, again, because it's the first time I really got in trouble, is he said, "Does that always happen when you turn around, like your leg just goes up and you kick?" And I said, "Yes." And then for whatever reason, when I left his office that day, I say I got in trouble. I really didn't get in trouble. I don't remember some huge punishment. But I remember having to live that story. And so for the rest of the day, every time I turned a corner, my leg would go up, right? For just all morning long. Because I wanted to make sure that he knew I wasn't lying, that I literally do have this problem. Because God knows I didn't want to own my situation. That's the problem we all struggle with. But here's the challenge. If you are a follower of Jesus Christ, doesn't matter what your worldview is. Doesn't matter what political persuasion you have. Ultimately, if you're a follower of Jesus Christ, and if you're not a follower of Jesus Christ, you could sit back right now and just smile and say, "Oh, dear God, these people believe weird things." But if you are a follower of Jesus Christ, ultimately you believe that you are accountable to your heavenly Father. You believe that ultimately you're accountable not to your mama, not to your dad, not to Donald Trump, not to your school teacher, not to any of those. You believe ultimately you are accountable to God for your life. Romans chapter 14, verse 12. Yes, each of us will give a personal account to God. One day, God is going to do an audit on your life, and he's going to do an audit on my life, and he's going to ask this very simple question: what did you do with what I gave you? How did you use your time? How did you use your resources? How did you use your influence? How did you use the opportunities? What did you do with your passions? What did you do with your personality? How did you use what I gave you? Did you use it wisely or unwisely? Were you responsible or were you irresponsible? And as Christians, we ought to be the most responsible people on the face of the earth, because we understand we're Christ's representatives in this world. We really believe that. We believe we're a reflection of his grace everywhere we go. So we ought to be people who pay our bills. We ought to be people who pay our taxes. We ought to be people who do business honestly. We ought to be people who take care of our families, clean up after our messes, pay child support, refrain from bashing one another. We ought to be just incredible examples of what it means to be responsible, because ultimately we believe that we are accountable to God for how we lived our life. But it's not easy to do that. And the reason it's not easy, and the reason it's a challenge to take responsibility for our life, is quite honestly, as much as I see the problem in you, I don't see it in myself. As much as I could stand here for an hour and talk about how flawed our government is, or talk about how flawed my family is in different areas, and talk about how flawed my wife is, and if she would just change this and change that, and talk about how flawed our school system. As much as I can sit there and talk about all these things, I don't really see a whole lot of flaws in myself. Isn't that interesting? Right? It's like Friday night. I was on Facebook, and after this verdict came out with Jerry Sandusky, and a horrible, horrible situation, and the justice that's coming his way. Thank God we have a justice system that doesn't allow monsters to get by with what he got, with what, of course, he was accused of doing. But my Facebook page was lit up with all these people just, they ought to be burning in hell for eternity, and we're glad they threw the books at him, and all of these just horrible, horrible comments toward him. And again, deservedly, obviously. But it wasn't lost on me that it's so easy for us to get passionate and fired up about everybody else's flaws, and nobody's on there saying, "Hey, here's where I'm flawed, boom, boom, boom. Here's where I'm messed up. Here's where justice really needs to still come my way." Because it's so easy to see where everybody else needs to change. It's like ever since we started Great Lakes Church back in 2009, every couple months, I'll have a friend come up to me or someone who's been with us for a while, and they'll say, "Hey, Dave, I've got to talk to you. This is not easy for me, but you know, we've been with you from the beginning, or we've been here for 2 years now, or we're thinking about leaving the church." I said, "Well, why is that? "Well, I get what we're doing, and I get we're trying to make it easy for people to find and follow Jesus Christ, but I just really believe that we should be much more involved in and then fill in the blank. We should be much more involved in helping unwed mothers. We should be much more involved in helping single parents. We should be much more involved in giving money to our community in various projects. We should be much more involved in world missions. We should, and this passion, passion, passion. And I let them go for a while. In fact, this just happened to me with one of my best friends last month. And it just, I'm just really feel like we should do this, Dave. And I said, well, stop. I said, I agree. We should be doing more. And so here's my question. God's put a passion in your heart. You're obviously fired up about this. I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but in the last decade, how much money and time have you given personally to this issue that you're so fired up about? And the answer is always, well, not much. Not much meaning zero? Often that's the case. It's just, take personal responsibility. If God's put that passion on, if you want to be, don't blame the church for you stopping in your spiritual journey. Don't blame the church for you stopping in your marriage. Don't blame your friends. Don't blame your wife. Don't blame your husband. Take personal responsibility for your life. So here's another question. Again, I told you I was going to throw out a bunch of questions today. What is the area of your life right now? You say, I kind of feel like I'm at a dead end. I kind of feel stuck. I kind of feel like I'm not moving forward. Is it your marriage? Is it parenting? Is it moving forward maybe in forgiving somebody? Is it moving forward in your finances? Where do you feel stuck today? Is it managing an anger problem? Where do you just feel like, dude, I'm not unstoppable in this area. I'm totally stoppable. I'm stopped. Because here's the follow-up question to that. On your sheet of paper, there's a circle. That circle represents a pie. Okay, it's not a real pie, otherwise you'd be eating the paper. But it represents a pie. And so the question I have for you, again, I'm just going to keep throwing these out, is of that area that you're totally frustrated, and you're totally mad, and you're totally worked up, you feel totally stuck, my guess is that most of us in those areas have pointed a finger in someone else's direction. Well, the reason is they're them, her, the government, this. That's fine. Admittedly, there's probably someone else's fault too, certainly a percentage of that. But is it possible that a percentage of that pie is your responsibility? I know your husband never talks to you and he's boring, and I get that. Is any of the marriage problem, percentage-wise, is any of it yours? See, the moment we begin to own our life, the moment we begin to take personal responsibility, the moment we put ourselves in a position to learn, to mature, and to grow, which means we're moving forward. We're not stoppable. It doesn't mean it's going quickly. It just means we're moving forward on a regular basis. So again, very difficult to see in ourselves. But let me tell you why really this is so common in not just society, but in the church. It's because irresponsibility, it's contagious. Irresponsibility is contagious, whether it's in your family, whether it's in your company, in our nation, it's totally contagious. That's why Proverbs 13:20 says, walk with the wise and become wise. Associate with fools and get in trouble. Now, King Solomon, the third king of Israel, considered by many the wisest person to ever live, he wrote this verse. And when he wrote it and he talks about fools, he's talking about them as he does all throughout the book of Proverbs, 69 different occasions. And in his next book, Ecclesiastes, he does 23 times. He talks about a fool in the context of someone who is irresponsible. And he's saying, you spend time with entitled people, eventually you're going to be the person who's always talking about your rights as a human being, but never your responsibility. He's saying, you spend time with people who are always blaming others, you're going to begin to see yourself as a victim. You're going to push your responsibility for whatever failures or flaws and faults onto other people. You're going to be the person who's always making up excuses. You're going to talk all the time about your rough upbringing, which granted, some of us had. You're going to talk all about you didn't get a good education. Your dad didn't hug you enough. You're genetically predisposed. You took a Myers-Briggs personality test, right? You found out you're a J-E-R-K. You can't help it. You're a P-E-R-V. It's just, this is who I am, right? Irresponsibility is contagious. And we have extreme examples everywhere we look of how it's rewarded. So eventually we're just like, well, if they got that, why even try? Charles Sykes wrote a book a few years ago called A Nation of Victims. And it's a fascinating book because what he does is he takes some extreme examples that have happened in our culture, true stories, and he just like makes this book out of them and say, look at how crazy we've gone
in pushing off responsibility to others. Probably my favorite story in the book is he talks about an FBI agent who embezzled $2,000 and then went and used it for gambling. And of course, he was let go from his job. But then he goes to court and he successfully argues that his gambling behavior was a handicap protected under the American with Disabilities Act. And so the FBI was forced to reinstate him his job. Now we hear that and we know that's extreme, but we all have stories that we can point to of extreme things we've seen that totally strip us of motivation. And so we eventually begin to say, why even work hard? Why should I even try? My wife's not trying. Why should I even try with my kids? They don't even have a heart that seems sensitive to any of this stuff. Why even try at my job? They make a lot more than I do. And they're not even doing half as much as I am. Here's why. Because ultimately, irresponsibility impacts everybody that is connected to the irresponsible person. That's why. Because if I avoid responsibility for my life, it doesn't just wash out. It means someone else has to be responsible for me. If I don't pick up after myself, someone else has to pick up for me. If I don't pay my bills, someone else has to pay them for me. If I volunteer at my kid's school and I don't show up, if I volunteer in the church and I just don't show up and I don't text and I don't let them know I'm not coming, it doesn't mean that it's just a wash. It means somebody else has to step in and do my job for me. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 24 says, don't be concerned for your own good, but for the good of others. Every decision you make affects someone else. This is huge. Let's just put it in the context of family. You could say, it's my life. It doesn't affect anybody else. Sure, it does. Right? Teens are notorious for this. Well, it's just me. Just leave me alone, mom and dad. This is all about me. Guys, a rebellion from a teenager that's consistently conveyed eventually affects the whole family just in the tension that's seen. A dad who doesn't control his anger. Parents that don't manage resources. It affects the whole family. I used to be a youth pastor for like 10 years. And in the course of 10 years, we had a number of girls in our youth group who got pregnant. And I certainly didn't ever shame them. I realize that's an ongoing issue. We'll never fully tackle this. And they'd come in my office. And it's funny because on a couple of occasions, the girls or their boyfriends would say, I guess I'm frustrated, Dave, because I'm having this tension with my parents because they're mad at me or they're upset with me. And it's just, it's my body. It's my life. I can do what I want to do. And I would always just have a nice smile. I'd say, oh, just wait. Who do you think is going to be watching your kid when you want to go out with your friends? Who do you think is going to be paying for those diapers? Who do you think is going to be paying for that crib you're about to set up? Oh yeah, mom and dad, your decisions affect everyone else. That doesn't shame you. It just helps you understand that all of us are connected in some way, shape, or form. Even the things that we do in private, that we say, this is my life. Those decisions affect other people because silently we're being changed and then we take what this thing going on inside of us that we may not even realize how much it's affected us, and it begins to pour out into the family. A few months ago, I got a ticket in the mail. It was from one of those dumb cameras at a stoplight. You've seen these things. You have them all over here. I don't know if they actually send tickets. They scare me. I'm just like a nervous wreck driving around this city. But you've got these cameras, and so I get a ticket in the mail. It's addressed to me, and it talks about me going through this red light. It gives me a link. I can go watch the video, and sure enough, there's my minivan going through it. I was fired up. I called the number on there, and I'm a pretty passionate guy, as you can tell, right? And so I call the number, and I say, here's the deal. I know you haven't, this isn't the first time someone's called and said this, but it's absolutely true. This ticket was addressed to me. It's got my license plate, everything else. That's fact. But here's the problem. I wasn't driving that vehicle. Honest to God, I wasn't driving it. And on principle alone, I refused to pay that ticket. And they're like, oh, well, sir, you sure you weren't driving the vehicle? I said, positive. Now, someone else in my family might have been driving that vehicle, but I'm not going to throw her under the bus right now. I said, I'm not paying on principle. And they say, here's the problem. We're not sending the ticket to the driver of the vehicle. We're sending it to the owner. It's like a parking ticket. You have to pay it. Now, you're not going to have a warrant for your arrest if you don't pay it because it is like a parking ticket. But you will have it, you know, affect your credit and things like that. I'm like, ah. So I went and paid the bill. Right? It just frustrated me because our behavior affects other people. I can't say to you, well, it's my life. I can go cheat on my wife. I don't have to be faithful to her. It's just me. Well, certainly it affects her. Oh yeah, it affects my kids. Oh yeah, it also affects my church. Oh yeah, it affects you. Because I've come out here so many times and there's relationship or connection starting to be made. It affects other people. That's why Ephesians 5:15. So be careful how you live. Don't live like fools, but live like those who are wise. Now, I know this isn't a parenting talk, but I got to tell you, this has worked with my kids. I heard of this a while ago, and I just said, you know what? I'm going to start trying it with my kids, and I love it. When my kids will leave a towel laying on the bathroom floor, or they'll leave a toy out in the middle of the living room and they didn't put it back where it belongs in the area with their toys, I'll call them in the room. I'll point. And they'll say, oh, especially my older daughters who are 11 and 13, oh, Dad, I'll take care of it. Oh, no, 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 no. No, no, no. Don't touch it. I want you to say to me, Dad, I've chosen to be irresponsible. Will you please pick up after me and be responsible for me? And 11, 13 years old, you can imagine how fun that is. Oh, Dad, just give it to me. And they won't say hardly anything. They'll just walk out. My six-year-old son, though, he'll have no problem. Dad, I have chosen to be irresponsible. Please be responsible for me. Right? I'm trying to convey that our actions affect other people. Now, as easy as it is for us to be irresponsible, the truth is all of us are built for responsibility. You go all the way back to the book of Genesis. After God creates the birds and the bees and the flowers and the trees and the moon up above, what he does is he creates humans, and he gives them responsibility. Before he gives them the rules, before he gives man and woman regulations and guidelines, he gives them responsibility. Genesis chapter 1, so God created human beings in his own image. In the image of God, he created them, male and female, he created them. Then God blessed them and said, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and govern it, reign over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky and all the animals that scurry along the ground. Then God said, look, I have given you every seed-bearing plant throughout the earth and all the fruit trees for your food, and I have given you every green plant as food for all the wild animals, the birds in the sky, and the small animals that scurry along the ground, everything that has life, and that is what happened. So here we are at the beginning of time. Before the Ten Commandments, before the rules, before don't kill, don't steal, don't go to Twilight movies, you have God saying, I'm giving you responsibility. That is why, men, when we take responsibility at our jobs and we succeed and we move forward, there's a pride that comes, a healthy pride that comes with that. Ladies, when you do it at your job, there's a healthy pride that comes with, I managed that, I accomplished that, I worked hard at that. Even if others weren't working hard, you know, this just internally, because that's how God made us. When you take responsibility for your kids and they're basically doing everything you don't want them to do and they're going the wrong direction, but then slowly but surely you start to see them change and they start making some healthy decisions, you start saying, yeah, you know, wow, that's, wow. They are doing that because of my consistency in their life. And again, there's that healthy pride because we took responsibility. We were created for responsibility. That's how God made us. But the moment we start shifting blame, the moment we start pointing fingers, the moment we start hiding behind loopholes and laws and other people, there's tension. We start feeling like we're at a dead end again. We start feeling like we're not moving forward. We feel stopped because we've stopped taking responsibility for our life. I'm just going to wrap up with this simple thought, just a moment or so. You've heard this before, but I think this summarizes really what I'm trying to communicate today, and that is this powerful life principle. You reap what you sow. You reap what you sow. You choose to be responsible, eventually you're going to reap some pretty cool things. You choose to be irresponsible, you're going to reap some pretty negative things. We've seen it over and over. You don't even have to be a Christian to believe this, to see it work in your life, because this is just a life principle. It just works. It just works. Galatians 6:5, for we are each responsible for our own conduct. You can't stand before God and say, if you would have just given me more resources, I would have been responsible financially. If you would have given me nicer kids, I'd have been more responsible as a parent. If you would have let me grow up in a home that went to church every week, then I would have been more responsible for my spiritual life. Nope, we're each responsible for our own conduct. And then he says in Galatians 6:7, don't be misled. You cannot mock the justice of God. Meaning, you can't act irresponsible and think God's going to reward that. You can't pull a fast one on God. A couple weeks ago, my brother Mark, who I'm really close to, and he helped us start the church and has been with us ever since the beginning, he went on to Facebook and he bashed me as the pastor, and he put start putting all these flaws down and start talking about how he regrets going to the church and regrets starting it with it. It was just a very tense thing. So I called him And I just said, Mark, what is going on here? He starts laughing. He said, do you know on Facebook you can control who sees your post? You're the only one who saw that. I'm like, you're an idiot. You're an idiot, man. Don't do that to me. All right, we can pull fast ones on each other. We're gullible. You can do that to your mom. Oh, mom, I didn't know they were gonna have beer at the party. I tried to tell the police officer that. Now you gotta come get me out of jail. Oh, okay, no problem. Oh, you sweetie, you can pull fast ones on mom. All right, you can pull fast ones on dad. It's the teacher's fault. He'll set up a meeting with her, yell at her. You can't pull a fast one on God. You can't act irresponsible and expect him to reward that in a positive way. Here's why: because the end of verse 7 says, "You will always harvest what you plant." Always. He didn't say you're going to harvest what you plant unless you get to the church and you start praying, unless you start giving, unless you start serving, unless you start really praying all really hard about this. He says eventually you're going to reap what you sow, and it's not even very fair and balanced. Sometimes you reap and you sow a whole lot more than you reap for the good or for the bad. You sow, and now you're just reaping for the good or for the bad based on your level of responsibility. Verse 9 summarizes it all for us. It says, so let's not get tired of doing what's good. At just the right time, we will reap a harvest of blessing if we do not give up. Now, here's the good news. If you say, man, Dave, I've been irresponsible. I feel stopped in so many areas of my life. The grace of God doesn't remove the consequences. We're going to have that harvest of what we planted. But the grace of God allows us to start sowing in a different direction. And so are you willing to do that? In your marriage, do you need to go home and say, I own 3% of this marriage? I've said it was all your fault. I guess some of it's my fault. I apologize. Do you need to go home and say, it's humbling to get financial help, but we need to bring someone else into our situation? I have to own this. With your kids, you're going to stop pointing fingers and you're going to say, we're to own this, because if you choose to do that, you will be unstoppable. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, we thank you for when you created us, giving us responsibility. Help us to manage our lives in a way that honors you, so that ultimately you will receive the glory and people will see your greatness because of what you're doing in our lives. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.